from WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1988 when a 23-year-old man went to visit his mother. He had an announcement to make. He had gotten engaged. The story played out in an episode of The Golden Girls, one of the most popular sitcoms of all time. Dorothy, played by Bea Arthur, does not approve of her son's decision to marry an African-American woman who is much older. Her son, 23, his fiancée is 44, and Dorothy declares they are just too different in every way. Hulu recently stopped offering this particular episode on its streaming service over a concern about blackface. That's because there's a scene in which the two families are meeting in the living room, and in walk Rose and Blanche, two of the white stars of the show, of course. They happen to be wearing mud masks. They're trying to lose weight and look younger for an upcoming event. Well, Rose sees a black family in the living room, and she clumsily explains, "This is just mud on our face. We're not actually black." For my taste, it's sort of a lazy, dumb line, but it was designed not to be blackface, but to show Rose being not so smart Rose. That's the character. Hulu dropped the episode out of caution over the image of two white women in mud masks. But that prompted a backlash from black writers. Author Roxane Gay tweeted, "That Golden Girls episode isn't blackface. Removing this episode is weird, counterproductive, and stupid. It diminishes the effort to actually end racism. It's just so dumb," end quote. Author and podcast host Erica Williams-Simon wrote, quote, "First of all, they were in mud masks, not blackface. And second of all, in what world does 'Stop Killing Us' sound like, please remove episodes of The Golden Girls? I didn't see that ask on anyone's protest sign. To be clear, I'm not attacking Hulu. I would just hate for the seriousness of this moment and movement to get lost in symbolic and sometimes silly overcorrections. Impact on real lives should be the measure of any change worthy of a PR push," end quote. Well, this has sparked debate over what to do if entertainment makes us uncomfortable, or how to identify what is worth discussing and what is simply worth canceling. For example, there are calls to permanently cancel all episodes of The Dukes of Hazzard, which featured the Confederate flag prominently displayed on the car driven by the stars of the show. The stars of the show say, essentially, get over it. Our guest this hour will address entertainment, The Golden Girls, cancellation, and more. And this is sort of an excuse for us to play clips of The Golden Girls because I'm going to out myself as a big fan of the show. And let me welcome our guests now. Norma Holland is Director of Community Development at Digital Hive. Any excuse to have you on the show, too. Welcome back to the program, my friend.
Good to be back. Thank you, Evan. This is going to be a great conversation, I can tell.
Well, Vanessa Cheeks is organizer of the Anomaly Film Festival, among many other hats she wears in this community. And Vanessa, always a pleasure. Thanks for making time.
Oh, of course. Anything for the Golden Girl.
See? Got a lot of fans. I don't know if Dan Howell, who is a personal trainer, is a Golden Girls fan. I have heard, though. I have heard, Dan, you are.
Yeah, we literally own pieces from Rue McClanahan's estate sale when she passed away. So, yeah, we're pretty big fans in this household.
Okay. And Chris Fanning, Director of Communications for Writers and Books, has dropped everything in his schedule to be with us this hour because apparently he's also a fan. Hey, how are you?
Good, Evan. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's always nice to have you as well. Let's start with this. We are going to have some fun this hour, but we are also here to have an important conversation about how we view entertainment, how entertainment might be viewed differently over time, and when is the right time to draw a line and when's the right time to have a conversation. Let's listen to a clip of the show that I just referenced. So this is 1988. It's the Mud Mask episode. I mean, it's really, the episode is about the marriage. And so you've got the two families in the living room, and in walk Betty White and Rue McClanahan, Rose and Blanche, and they're wearing mud masks, and let's listen.
You must be Michael's parents. Mama, put your glasses on. Oh, my Lord.
This is mud on our faces. We're not really black.
Okay, Vanessa Cheeks, I'm going to start with you. You have a problem with what you heard and saw there?
No. I admittedly had not seen the full episode, but when watching the clip, I think it's obvious. I think, like you said, it's a little bit of a lazy joke. It kind of has that I don't want to say fake outrage, but from the black woman, that classic, oh, my Lord. I think I've heard my grandma say that so many times. And you know what it means. It's, just, it's like something's amiss. But at the same time, I think that in a lot of ways, these older sitcoms kind of addressed race. There were definitely missteps, but I think it was not half-hearted, but just like a short way to kind of say, like, this could be a problem, and then a quick way to put the brakes on it and say, but it isn't, mm-hmm. and move on quickly with the scene.
Mm-hmm. Norma Holland, what did you make of it?
Well, first of all, this is one of my favorite episodes ever. I remember watching it, you know, years and years ago for the first time, and of course I see it differently now because I'm older, but I love this episode for so many reasons. First, it deals with May-December romances, right? I mean, we've all known people who, you know, have relationships or have had relationships with someone who is older or perhaps younger. So there's that. That's kind of the big takeaway for me. But yeah, the racial tension, I mean, I'm the product of a biracial marriage. So for me, you know, this kind of outrage or concern, I don't say concern, is something that, I mean, I heard stories about growing up. So this was very familiar to me. You know, the two meeting of the cultures and the instant aversion to one another. I had to say aversion, but you know what I'm saying? There was that instant
suspicion,
like, whoa, is
sure.
this going to work?
Yeah.
Yeah, the suspicion. Whoa, is this going to work? I mean, you're black, he's white. How is this going to work? So, I mean, that kind of tension I was familiar with. But that joke, look, I get it. Low-hanging fruit. And sometimes comedians will reach for it, right? Sometimes comedians will go and reach for that low-hanging fruit. But it was a funny scene because Rose is so dim-witted, right? Like, she wouldn't even think. You know what I'm saying? Like, Rose doesn't have a racist bone in her body. She's just very obvious about it or sort of oblivious. So, like, she would say that, right? So it was just very humorous. So, no, I wasn't offended at that episode. I mean, I can point to other things that are offensive, but that ain't it.
Yeah, and you know, Norman, let me just follow up a little bit with you there because, you know, you're obviously familiar with the entire episode. And the entire episode, you know, just set aside that kind of clumsy joke, the episode does explore the tension that you just described in a way that I thought, at least for 1988, was trying to be thoughtful, was trying to be forthright. They didn't give you like a full 100% full house ending. There was still, you know, not full satisfaction in the marriage, but you had family saying, hey, we're gonna love each other. We're gonna spend this time together. We're gonna support this. And I thought, you know, there were actually other jokes within that show that might have been even been more, I don't know, if objectionable. I mean, there's a Rose has another moment where she says, can I ask a dumb question? And Dorothy says, better than anyone
better
I know.
Better than anyone I know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then Rose asks, what color is black people's dander? Do black people have dandruff? And Dorothy says, no, honey, God decided that they've gone through enough already. They don't get that. And you know, I mean, like, there were little nods at the time to just all the tension and struggle and pain and sacrifice, while also kind of taking some risks with jokes. And I wonder, Norma, if you cancel an episode based on one joke that might land the way that Mudmask did, do you miss the chance to actually look at the totality of what they're trying to do in that episode? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I feel that whole episode, you know, you could discuss for hours what that episode right. really was about. And you've got to also think about the time, too. This is 1988. You know, 10 years earlier, Sanford and Son was making jokes about race and in a way that might have made people uncomfortable. Look in the 70s. I mean, what was it? All in the Family,
yeah.
right? I mean, yeah. you know, Archie Bunker, classic racist. But, well, we loved him, you know. There's just something about that guy, you know, but you know, and then of the Jeffersons was a spinoff of All in the Family, right? George Jefferson, and they finally got a piece of the pie, right? So, I feel like if they wanted to put like a disclaimer at the front of that episode to say this episode depicts blackface, whatever, and then if you want to talk about it, great. If you don't want to watch it because it makes you uncomfortable, look, I get it. It makes me uncomfortable. If someone came into a room in 2020, wearing blackface at a costume party, I'm going to be offended. I'm going to be like, why are you doing that? Is that funny? Really? Is that funny? You know? But again, it's all about context. I think maybe that's what's being missed. Maybe this is an overshooting, if you will, of concern.
Overcorrection. Okay. Dan Howell, how did you see it?
I agree with Norma and Vanessa on this, that, you know, they were playing it for a joke. And, you know, this episode to me feels like the 1988 Golden Girls take on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, you know, we're focusing on an interracial relationship and a May-December relationship. Like, those are the focuses of the episode, not this kind of throwaway joke because someone wasn't wearing their glasses and Rose is dim-witted. I feel like it feels like a bit of an overshoot that, you know, maybe this isn't the thing to pinpoint as being culturally insensitive, and there are other larger things to focus on. As a white man, I don't see it as offensive, but I've heard from people in the Black community and in on Twitter and Facebook that, you know, this isn't what we were looking to take away. There's bigger things to focus on.
Yeah, and by the way, can we stop saying May, December? As a man in his 40s, can we say like May, September? Like May, September would be fine. Chris Fanning.
Okay, Evan.
Chris Fanning,
well,
what did you make of this?
Thank you, Evan, sir. I agree with what everybody else on the panel said before me. I think this episode, you know, it tries to cover a lot in one Golden Girls segment. You know, you have the interracial marriage, you have the ageism, you have them, you know, the girls are planning another event and there's so much to do. And spoiler alert, and I think I'm right because I also haven't seen this episode in forever, but I believe Michael's fiance is pregnant.
She is.
At the end of it. So you have that, you know, also thrown into the mix. I had actually forgotten that there was the mud mask in this episode. You know, obviously Golden Girls is highlighted on my Twitter hashtag, so I see it whenever it comes up. But I agree. I think there's a lot going on in this. They could have focused a little more. They could have aimed for, you know, a little bit more highbrow joking and not this low-hanging fruit that everyone's echoed about.
Well, I said, coming into this program, I thought the Golden Girls was actually quite ahead of its time in being willing to discuss the uncomfortable aspects of race, homophobia. We've got clips to share with you coming up here. But for those who, before we kind of go to other episodes, let me just follow up with Vanessa Cheeks and just ask you, you know, when you hear other writers, and I think I quoted a couple off the top, I mean, when Erica Williams Simon writes that this is not what we were asking for when we were demonstrating over the last month here. We were not asking, this is not, and she writes, quote, "I would just hate for the seriousness of this moment and this movement to get lost in symbolic and sometimes silly overcorrections," end quote. Vanessa, do you agree with that? And if you do, can you elaborate on what you think it means to sort of maybe overcorrect and then risk jeopardizing the seriousness of a movement that needs to be taken seriously?
Yeah, so I think that the overcorrection and the people putting the movement in jeopardy, I think a lot of times when people talk about like cancel culture and people calling for these things to be, you know, pushed aside or removed altogether, I think a lot of that blame has to be put on these corporations who are just too scared to stand behind their products or who are just making these, you know, hand sweeping gestures without caring about the context. In my opinion, Hulu does not care about the context of that episode. It only cares that people might perhaps eventually call them out on having it. And so it's a purely financial decision. They're not interested in creating a conversation. They're not interested in, you know, sparking a debate. They're not interested in putting a disclaimer to make people comfortable. They're just worried, like, okay, if we keep this here, are we going to receive backlash with the current political climate? And my problem with that is when you go back, you know, people are saying, well, somebody on Twitter tweeted that this episode offended them. And then it turns into blaming the people in the movement or blaming people who are calling for, you know, people to actually be held accountable or companies to actually be held accountable for their racist content or actions that are actually racist. And it kind of paints them with a bad brush. And that, I think, just grinds my gears a little bit, because to me, it's like, it's not their fault. And we shouldn't shun people or make people feel bad for calling for change, even if maybe the change that they want isn't necessarily super productive, but at least they're sparking that conversation. But I definitely think Hulu needs to chill. Just relax.
Well, I actually think that's a real, I think that's a really interesting set of points that Vanessa just made there, because if the, I think the discussion about cancel culture can get a little tiring and a little lacking nuance, but I actually think there's a lot more nuance there, and we could do that all day, and we'll do that maybe on different days here. But just to pick up the thread of what Vanessa is saying, if it was as simple as, well, everybody just wants to cancel everything and this movement is overreactive, then you wouldn't see black writers coming out and saying, whoa, 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 this is not what we're talking about. Put that episode back up. It's fine. Or we could talk about it. Or what did it mean? They would probably just go with the quote-unquote cancellation, or the cancel culture. And so that makes it very interesting to hear Vanessa's point then, that Hulu is either making a financial decision, they think that this is the right thing to do just to kind of get out in front and be careful, or what I would call maybe kind of a clumsy virtue signaling moment, Vanessa, where they want to show that they are with a movement without actually doing the work of trying to understand what something is about. I mean, it's more of a cheap gesture than actually caring. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's like that one, oh gosh, I think it's like Jersey Mike's, that one sub shop that changed their BLT to a BLM.
Oh my God. I didn't hear about that. Oh my God.
We didn't ask for it. We don't need it.
Don't make me laugh at that. That's horrific.
It's terrible. First off, I'm never going to call a tomato a mato just to make your acronym work.
Well, that's cashing in. I mean, that, and just like Vanessa said, that's cashing in. I mean, that's them looking to make a buck off of a very serious movement. Oof. You know what I'm saying? That's dollars and cents. That's not genuine. It's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh. Well, for those who doubt, though, my contention that the Golden Girls could have been ahead of its time on issues of race and homophobia, let's listen to a series of clips if we could, because it's the Golden Girls and why not? Now, technically, the next two clips are from the Golden Palace, which I'm told wasn't nearly as good. It was a spinoff, but I mean, it was the characters. And so in this episode, you had a young Don Cheadle. You're going to hear his voice in this. Mm. And he's talking to Blanche about the Confederate flag, which Blanche and her family have hung and for a long time. And she didn't really get, like, what is the big deal here? You're telling me this episode could have aired in the last 18 months? Well, this is, again, from, I think this is 1990, 91, something like that. Let's listen to this clip first.
Hey, what are you doing?
I don't want this here, Blanche.
Well, I swear, if you're not making such a thing. You know, I remember once when Big, Big Granddaddy Hollinsworth took...
Just stop it. This flag, Mrs. Devereaux, is not about college football games or quilting bees or fried chicken on Sunday. It's about colleges that won't let me in. It's about companies that won't hire me. It is about crosses being burnt on people's lawns today. Not in the evil past, Blanche, today. And not just in the South, all over. The North is just as bad.
Damn Yankees.
You honestly don't get this, do you?
I don't see where there's anything to get. This is just a flag. To me, this is just a bunch of wonderful family memories.
Well, I don't think I want to work for anybody who feels that way. I don't think I can.
But Roland...
I'm just going to look for another job, Blanche.
Again, that is... We're talking about the Confederate flag 30 years later here. That's... Come on. So later in the episode, we've got another clip for you. That tension, that interaction, and then of course, the goal of finding resolution continues. Let's listen to another clip from the same episode.
What am I supposed to do and think about my family now? What am I supposed to think about all those people I love? What am I supposed to think about me? Everything I grew up believing in, all my wonderful memories, that they're all tarnished now by... God, by the truth, I owe you an apology.
No, you don't owe me nothing.
Will you stay?
Blanche, you really have to start listening to me when I tell you something is bothering me. And I'll try to understand why some of these things mean so much to you. Look, the whole world is messed up right now, and I would like to see that get better. But in order for that to happen, white people are going to have to start making positive assumptions when they see people of color. And people of color could make positive assumptions when they see white people. Man, things are just messed up. Blanche, let's just try and get rid of all the barriers and just trust each other, okay?
All right, so that's a bit of a Full House ending. That last line, I mean, it was like, we're really hammering the white viewers hard. Let's give them, like, let's soften it a little right at the end there. But
I know you can't see my face, but a face was made.
I figured. Well, let me ask all four of you. I'll start with Vanessa then. I mean, setting aside that last, and you know, people of color can you know, whatever. The rest of the content there, it feels shockingly fresh in 2020, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't call it dealing with the exact same racism fresh.
No, I mean, like we're still there. That's kind of what I mean. Is if I would have played that clip for somebody who didn't know the context and said this show is from 2018, 2019, they would have a hard time going, well, that sounds out of place.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's exactly the same talking points, the same context. Like, we're literally talking about the Confederate flag, seems like months ago, but it's like, what, last week, and it's still a conversation we're having today. And it's interesting to see how, like, cyclical it is. Like, it's just kind of coming back, and the ebb and flow of constantly having to have these conversations. Ugh, it's exhausting.
Norma Holland, what did you make of it?
You know, the part where Blanche says, you know, what am I supposed to make of this flag represents such happy memories. I have to tell you about this because this is true. This happened. I was at an event one time, and I'm going to be real vague about this because obviously, you know, but I was at an event, and a woman I was talking to was talking about how, you know, she grew up in the country and her father was very wealthy. This was an older woman. And she said, and she remembers that her father would bring in, entertainment from Rochester to the country. And she remembers, you know, the minstrel shows and all of the dancers. And I just went, my face must have just, what did you say? I said, I'm sorry, did you say minstrel shows? And she says, oh, they were wonderful. And I just remember thinking,
oh, my God,
woman, do you see my face? Like, you know, I know I'm a whiter shade of pale, but do you look at my face? Can you tell? You know, are you seeing my face, lady? Come on now. But to her, and just like with Blanche, that wasn't racist. That was entertainment. It was wonderful, she said. And I just thought, oh boy, oh my Lord. Okay. I think that yes, this is a conversation that, you know, it's just as relevant today in 2020 as it was when that episode came out. He could have been saying that last week, and I would have, you know, I would have said, oh, yeah, okay, right?
Which says something about this country. But what do you think, Dan Howell?
So I saw this clip the other day. Someone shared it on Twitter, and like that I wasn't familiar with it, but it's so disheartening that it literally sounds like it's from last week, mm-hmm. That it's still so relevant. And there's still arguments over artifacts like this that hurt people in communities. And other people are like, well, too bad. I like it. So whatever. Like that's not a thing. We have to listen to these communities that are saying this is wrong. This is offensive. And this is why. And it's crystal clear. It's not difficult to comprehend if you have a modicum of empathy in your body. If it's wrong, it's wrong. Like that's the way it is. And I've seen so many conversations about, you know, the Confederate flag and also, you know, colloquialisms and phrases that have roots in racism that have been around for so long, most of us don't know it. And it's been eye-opening for me to see, phrases that I've heard used before that I honestly did not know were rooted in racism, and it's they're terrible. But I think it's good that these things are happening, and there's more understanding about why it's wrong and never say this again. My responsibility as a member of the white community to call out other people in the white community that, oh, hey, here's the thing with that phrase or that word. It's horrible. So there's a better way to say this that won't offend other people. But it's somewhat mind blowing that like that these conversations are so cyclical, and that we keep having them, and we have to keep correcting people about why what you're saying is wrong and offensive to people.
Chris Fanning.
Yeah, I agree with Dan. I mean, I think it. I will admit, I don't think I've ever seen any episodes of The Golden Palace myself. I know, I'm sorry. So props to my mother, who's the one who sent me this. It's not good. My mom sent me the clip last week, and I saw it. And, you know, I think I'm looking forward to talking about the other issues that Golden Girls did address, you know, over the run of the series. And, you know, one of Blanche's tropes is she is the Southern Belle, and we are going to use Blanche, you know, as a platform to kind of bring these things up. I didn't even know Don Cheadle was on the show. That was shocking to me. And it just makes me think, you know, okay, so that was the end of that episode. We tied it up. You know, does that carry through in the rest of the series?
Yeah, that's
just
fair.
Another one-off. You know, as this was the theory of the episode, and we're sticking with it. And next episode, Rose is going to be addicted to pain pills again, you know, or something like that.
Well, after our only break of the hour, I've got some clips to show why I think the show was ahead of its time on homophobia. But I also want to talk to our guests in our second half hour about the call surrounding some other programs, like Dukes of Hazzard. And for listeners who have emailed the program saying, well, one, why are you doing a show on a 30-year-old television show? First of all, streaming is forever. Golden Girls are forever, my friends. You make the show in the 1980s, it's never going away with streaming services. But it's part of a more serious conversation about how we make decisions about what is acceptable, what changes, what our standards are, and sometimes whether we reach too broadly and whether we're oversensitive about it. And frankly, whether that oversensitivity can hurt a valid and important movement towards social change. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with our guests, Vanessa Cheeks, organizer of the Anomaly Film Festival, Norma Holland, director of community development at Digital Hive, Dan Howell is a personal trainer, Chris Fanning is director of communications for Writers and Books. More clips on the other side of this break. I don't like saying this, but you actually don't want to miss these. Coming up in our second hour, The Washington Post's Monica Hesse says, mothers are getting the worst end of this pandemic, much worse than dads, generally speaking, and the pandemic is threatening to roll back any modest gains women have made in the American workplace. She says women are being asked to do more, get less, and deal with bigger problems during this pandemic, and there's a breaking point coming. We talk to mothers next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So when we talk about the way we look back at shows and whether they've changed and whether we should reevaluate or whether some should be canceled because they're offensive, I was surprised to see Hulu pull down an episode of The Golden Girls recently, only because even though I don't know every episode in the canon, I do know, or at least in my own mind, Golden Girls was kind of ahead of its time on grappling with issues such as race, homophobia. So here we've got some clips from the show in which Blanche's brother comes out, and she is struggling with that. And let's listen to this conversation between Blanche and her brother.
Dorothy, that's different. We're talking about going out in public. Oh, what are people going to say?
Probably nothing we haven't heard before.
Oh, Clay, I was just telling the girls.
We heard what you were telling them, Blanche, and I am truly sorry you feel that way.
Will you tell me why you want to put yourself and Doug through this? You know how people can be.
And if my own sister can't accept our relationship, what chance would I have with anyone else, right?
Right. No! No, what I mean...
We get what you mean.
Blanche, we don't have to worry about what the world thinks about our relationship. It just doesn't matter because we're there for each other. I'd do anything for Doug, and he'd bend over backwards for me.
That joke, come on. I'm always thinking, don't make me laugh at this. Now, same episode, Blanche talking to Sophia, same subject. Let's listen.
Oh, look, I can accept the fact that he's gay, but why does he have to slip a ring on this guy's finger so the whole world will know?
Why did you marry George?
We loved each other. We wanted to make a lifetime commitment, wanted everybody to know.
That's what Doug and Clayton want, too. Everyone wants someone to grow old with, and shouldn't everyone have that chance?
Sophia, I think I see what you're getting at.
I don't think you do. Blanche, Will you marry me?
All right, let me go back across the panel. Let me go back across the panel. So, Chris Fanning, I think the points that you and you were making about the Golden Palace episode with Don Cheadle apply here, but I do think this is a show that didn't play homophobia for a quick little Full House moment or a quick laugh. I thought that was part of a larger thread of saying we're willing to confront it and we're going to do it in a way in 1987, 1988, 1989 that is legit, and it still sounds legit to me. What do you make of those clips?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can remember watching reruns of the Golden Girls, you know, over summer break or when I was home from school sick. And so these are probably some of the first places I saw a positive portrayal of homosexual men. And for, you know, a young gay man, I can't say that that didn't have an effect on me. I think that Clayton's episodes, there's an episode before this when Clayton comes out to Blanche for the first time. And, of course, she struggles with it. You know, it's almost the same sort of setup. But at the end, she does accept him and, you know, I'm glad that you told me, blah, blah, blah. Then we have this episode where Clayton's getting married. And Rose, I believe, says something to her like, so you can accept that he's gay, but you can't accept that he would date or fall in love or have any of those other things. And I think that's really, you know, that's a subject, an evergreen subject of, well, that person's gay, but I don't want to see them holding hands. I don't want to see them kissing in public. You know, it raises the subject again and kind of takes it up to another level. So I enjoyed those clips that you shared.
Dan Howell.
It's a great episode in dealing with homophobia as a gay man who has been married for a couple years. You know, we've always looked at this episode as really important in the time frame it took place in. Like this is pretty early in culture for a very frank, honest discussion about homophobia and families and friends having experiencing people they know and they love coming out and wanting the same things as them. And again, you know, it's one of those things where it took 20 years before it was legal in New York State to get married. So, you know, it's still so timely because these are still things people have to deal with. And, you know, and a show like that, I agree it was ahead of its time in dealing with these things. And, you know, I feel like a good portion of this has to do with B. Arthur being such an advocate for the LGBT community. And, I mean, she's, you know, it wasn't until after she passed that we all found out that she had donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to homeless gay youth across the country. And so, I think they all knew they had something to say and a platform to say it in a way that felt relatable to people, because these were characters America had become comfortable with. They loved the Golden Girls. They could see themselves in these characters. They could see their loved ones in these characters. So it took things that may have seemed out of reach or outside of someone's world and brought it into their home in a series they already appreciated and already looked forward to, and made them look at like, oh, these women can handle these things. Maybe I can. And, you know, I think it's an important touchstone in entertainment, because, you know, as Chris said, a lot of us growing up look for these role models, and they didn't exist very readily when we were younger. So when they came up and it was positive, it was like, oh, what is this? This is different. I get this.
Yeah, and Dan, the clip we just heard aired, I think, 1 year or within a year of the debut of a show that became even more popular than the Golden Girls, and that was Seinfeld. And I go back and I watch episodes of Seinfeld, and for all of the virtues of Seinfeld, I think it earned its reputation as a very homophobic show. I mean, I just saw an episode the other night where George needs to go get a massage or wants to get a massage. He can get a free massage through Jerry's insurance or something, and thinks he's going to get a massage from a woman. He's horrified that he's getting a massage from a man. It's a good-looking man. Then he's horrified that did he have a physical reaction? What does it mean about himself? And he's just, and all of it is played for what I think are the worst kinds of laughs, without any sort of constructive meaning. And this came after the Golden Girls. So when people say, well, how could you say it's a foreign, this wasn't the only show that, I know it wasn't the only show, but it was at a climate where it was before Seinfeld. Seinfeld was on for almost a decade. And it was pretty homophobic, and I'm not saying cancel Seinfeld. I don't know if anybody else here is. I'm not saying that. I'm just observing the difference, and I'm impressed with the Golden Girls in that way, Dan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's kind of one of those two steps forward, one back, where, you know, and there's still programming that's still pretty new, where it's the same type of playing homophobia for laughs when it's something that isn't.
I'm going to get email from Seinfeld fans. I want to communicate to the audience. I love Seinfeld. I do. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan.
I also very much enjoy Seinfeld.
Yes. So please, before you come for me. But some of that stuff missed the mark. Norma Holland, what do you make of the clips we heard there about Blanche and her brother?
Yeah. Oh, well, I think it's great because what she's doing is saying, you're gay. That's great. Now keep it a secret, right? Like, don't tell anybody. And I want you to deny who you fully are, right? And I'm going to make you one-dimensional, right? And deny the fact that you have hopes and dreams just like I do as a heterosexual person, right? And that happens a lot, right? It's almost like, oh, that's cute. You're gay. And it's like, no, that means that I like, you know, I'm attracted to men and I want to be able to live like you do and do the things you do and be married and have all the, and children. And that's the other thing, you know, that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. You know, in the 1990s, Look When Ellen came out on the show. That was a big deal. Yeah. I was a reporter at 13 Women. And I remember doing a story about that, you know, Ellen is going to come out as gay. And it's like, really? It's 1990. It was 1996 or 1997 or something. Yeah. And that was a big deal, you know, NBC, I think she was on NBC, I forget, but it was a big deal. And I remember I interviewed a man who was previously married, but came out and it was out about his homosexuality. And you know, he talked about what the show meant, right, to a lot of people, that this character who was so beloved, just like the Golden Girls, right, like beloved, and people loved Ellen, and she was cute, and she was funny, and she was relatable. And now she was going to tell the world she is gay, right? And it's just like, oh, really? I don't know. I look back and I think that's so laughable. Now I'm like, really? Who cares? But back then, you know, think about the time. And also think about when the Golden Girls were discussing this issue, there was the AIDS epidemic. I mean, it was rampant at that time. And there was a lot of fear about AIDS, right? Like, who can you get it from? Kissing someone? Can you get it from being around someone who has it? It's just... I always think about the lens. I always think about like the time that something aired or when something was came into being. What was happening around the world at that time? Because that puts it all into perspective.
That's such a wise point. I mean, and again, to kind of contrast it with Seinfeld, there's an episode where Elaine is on the train to a wedding and there's a woman who asks, are you going to a wedding? You know, what kind of wedding? What's the groom's name? And she says, no, it's a lesbian wedding. And they put a laugh track laugh in there as if that's a laugh line. Like a lesbian wedding is a laugh line. In 1993, whenever that was, and that was that. And then Elaine wants to be clear. She's now one of the brides. She's not getting married. Don't think it's her. When Elaine was actually ostensibly a pretty progressive political character, versus you know Rue McClanahan, to Norma's point, claiming that she's worried about her brother and she's worried about Doug. I'm worried about you and Doug. What will people say? And Doug, they immediately turn it on her. Well, what do you say? What are you going to say? What are you going to lead with? There's so much more nuance and depth to it than that, and I appreciate that. Vanessa, what do you think?
I think that, you know, thinking about these episodes and the episodes surrounding racism, it always makes me think about how a lot of times sitcoms are used as a catalyst for social change and to have these conversations because you're usually sitting around and watching them with your family. And another popular sitcom from the time was A Different World. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one, but it's a spin-off of The Cosby Show. And a lot of their conversations revolved around race and sexuality. And one of my favorite episodes revolves around consent. And to me, it's a window or a door opening to kind of get people to have that conversation. Now, I'm not a TV sitcom, especially recent ones. It's not really my forte. I can never get through an entire series of anything. So do not quote me on this, but I kind of feel like recent sitcoms, maybe not as recent as 2019, 2020, but definitely mid-2000s, you're right. These jokes were kind of at the expense of, you know, people using blackface at the expense of or talking about gayness or queerness or someone's sexuality and using it as a joke and kind of trying to say, well, it's edgy, and but it's not sparking that same conversation. It's not hitting home these same messages. And then I think it kind of warps that idea of like being able to have these conversations, because then you get people saying, well, it's not a big deal, or maybe not giving them the opportunity to change their minds. And then now as we get into 2020, we have shows like Black-ish who are, again, having these conversations, yeah, or Fresh Off the yeah. Boat. Kim's Convenience, all of those are starting to kind of go back to, I think, that original time, like where we're telling stories and telling it from a different point of view, and also just using it as an opportunity, even though people aren't sitting around and watching TV all together anymore, we're streaming it or watching it on our phones, watching it in separate rooms. We're still now starting to go back to creating that idea of like these sitcoms can be used to generate social change.
Well, yeah. And listen, yeah, if you can't get through a sitcom these days, that you just haven't watched The Good Place yet. You'll get through it.
I've seen it.
Oh.
I don't even know what that is.
All right, so
look, don't laugh, Evan. I'm watching Little House on the Prairie, okay? So I'm Prairie Chick. Y'all follow me on Twitter. I live tweet. I love that show.
The last like series that I watched was The Dark Crystal, and it's because it has puppets in it, and I love a good puppet.
Dark Crystal.
Great.
Oh, man.
Great.
Also, Sex Education on Netflix. Great. Okay. So I want to ask you about another show, though, that is sort of back in the headlines. TV Land in 2015 picked up The Dukes of Hazzard, and the cable network dropped Dukes of Hazzard after what happened at a number of events in the American South, the mass shooting committed by white supremacists at a church in Charleston. Then, of course, we saw Charlottesville. So TV Land dropped Dukes of Hazzard a little while ago, but there are calls now to keep Dukes of Hazzard off the air permanently. And recently, The Hollywood Reporter interviewed the two stars of Dukes of Hazzard. By the way, if you're wondering why, I mean, the car that they drove, the General Lee, was emblazoned with a Confederate flag. John Schneider, who played Bo Duke on the CBS series, told The Hollywood Reporter the following, quote, "I have never had an African-American come up to me and have any problem with it whatsoever. The whole politically correct generation has gotten way out of hand." Schneider's co-star was Tom Wopat. He played Luke Duke. And here's what he told The Hollywood Reporter, quote, "The situation in the country has obviously changed in the last 40 years. I feel fortunate to be living in a time when we can address some of the injustices of the past. But I would stress that the car itself is innocent. Dukes of Hazzard was a unifying force. Mom, grandma, everyone wanted to watch it together. But who benefits from division? The Dukes of Hazzard has been shot down, I believe unfairly," end quote. So that's Bo and Luke Duke defending the General Lee and saying that their show united people, and they've never met a black person who had a problem with it. Anybody want to...
I have never seen an episode of The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, okay.
It just sounds completely boring to me. So, and of course, you know, since no black person ever brought it up to them, it certainly isn't an issue. That's all I can think of.
Okay. I heard you saying same, Vanessa. That means you haven't watched it. I mean, the show, I mean, I saw episodes as a kid. It was fun, I guess. I mean, if you watch it just for the whatever entertainment value of the show, I wasn't thinking very socially consciously at the time in my childhood. But what do you make of him saying, look, I've never had an African-American come up to me and say they had a problem with the General Lee and the Confederate flag on the car?
So, listen, all right. So I have... I know of Dukes of Hazzard, so I'm not completely, like, clueless. I, of course, know what it is. I think the only thing I've actually sat down and watched of it was like the Dukes of Hazzard with Johnny Knoxville and Jessica Simpson with what's her face, and that's the only thing I recall from my wayward youth. That being said, the only issue that I have is a lot of times when people are trying to critique something, like, it's okay to critique it. It's okay for people to say, hey, guess what? Oh, that's racist. That doesn't mean that you have to double down. You can just be like, yeah, like it was. And like, this is what the story was and blah, blah, blah. But when you double down and you say, like, you start blaming quote unquote, like PC culture or whatever, you're basically saying you don't care. You don't care about the symbol. You don't care about its impact. Nobody has had the guts to come up to you and say, like, hey, this is makes me uncomfortable, or the opportunity, should I say. Mm-hmm. And so now social media creates that opportunity. Unless someone's going to write you a fan letter back in, when was this, 1905? Like, what are you going to do? And so now we have Twitter, and we can say, for better or for worse, we can say whatever we want, whenever we want. And it reaches people's ears. And it, again, it doesn't mean that it's bad, and it doesn't mean critiques are bad. It doesn't mean that we should stop showing it or we should show it. It just means that people are having a conversation around it. And again, TV Land is going to decide, for better or for worse, what they're going to do. And it's, in my opinion, going to be purely financial, whether they mm-hmm. think they're going to lose more money by keeping it or, you know, mm-hmm. save more money by getting rid of it or save hassle by getting rid of it. That's going to be their choice. But it's not going to be because somebody on Twitter said they hate the Dukes of Hazzard and it's racist. It's going to be because of them. And whatever.
let me grab a phone call. Lewis and Romulus wants to jump in on the General Lee. Go ahead, Lewis.
Yeah, so I watched the episode for the series for several years, and I kind of think if people thought about it, the General Lee and the cast and characters directly related to the car always did good. They didn't do anything bad. They didn't think, they didn't shoot anybody. They obviously didn't do any racist stuff, and I think they're just kind of blowing it out of proportion, and I wouldn't consider it being on the roof where you didn't see it every minute of every episode that it was emblazoned. I mean, I think it's a poor choice of things to put there, but the general is the general, and that's what made him the general, is having that flag on there and the old one on the side.
All right, Lewis, thank you. Norma Holland, his argument is, the Duke boys always did good. They were on the side of good, so that flag inadvertently was on the side of the good guys. What do you make of that?
Well, it's just like when Blanche says that, you know, this symbol, the flag, reminds her of all the good, right? And I'm not going to take that from this character or this guy that's calling in. You know, maybe the flag, you know, for some people evokes a simpler time. I don't even know if you can call it that, but you know what I'm saying, that it evokes a love of the South and what the South meant to them. Okay. The reality is though, that flag has a negative connotation. And for a lot of people, it brings up fear and thoughts of loved ones who, you know, were lynched, or those who were denied opportunity, or it is a loaded symbol. But as television, as sometimes the entertainment industry does, is it oversimplifies things, right? No. It's about the South and our love of Southern culture. I love Southern culture. My family's from Mississippi, you know. But I mean, you couldn't, you know, wave that flag in front of them and not have them think, you know, fearful thoughts. So okay, maybe the boys did a good. Maybe they were good, right? They were good. But again, it's just. In that whole symbol was just and like Vanessa said, look, back in the 70s, you know, these stars didn't have access to people like they do now, right? We didn't have access to them like we do now, so that's why we're talking about it now, and that's why we're sharing our thoughts now. I never watched the show. I think I may have watched half of an episode. It came out when it was in the 70s. I was too young, so I never, you know, I wouldn't watch it today.
Okay. Dan Howell, you know, have you seen it?
Yeah, so again, this was a show I didn't really watch. I didn't relate to it. You know, I remember reruns being on, and I feel like I'm only familiar with the intro of the show, where they jump the car like over a river or a creek. I don't know.
That car's always
like
in
every,
there.
Like every episode.
Yeah.
That's their thing. The car jumps. But like the real, you know, basis of my knowledge of the show is when Family Guy spoofed it. It's overt, you know, racism, and like the car is called the General Lee. Like, he, you know, led the Confederate Army. Maybe not part of American history that we're super proud of. Maybe it wasn't their intention, and maybe they are looking at Southern culture, but that doesn't mean it isn't offensive to people. It doesn't mean it's not racist. You know, there's some root of it in there. And, you know, it's the same, I feel like it's similar conversations that people are now having about Gone with the Wind, where it's in a time period that is rough, and Disney Plus having disclaimers on their older films about cultural representations that are outdated. We're just shining a light on these.
And we're not going to do rides based on Song of the South. There's a lot. But what I heard from the panel this hour is not, you know, cancel everything related to Dukes of Hazzard. It's just, you got to own it. Let's talk honestly. Let's have real discussions about who's been hurt, who's been harmed, and why. And then you let networks and others make decisions. But you got to make choices based on being real. Chris Fanning, Dan Howell, Norma Holland, Vanessa Cheeks, I really appreciate the conversation and the wisdom this hour. I can't wait to see you all in person someday.
Such a great group.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. You guys are awesome.
Bye.
Thank you. Cheers. Let's do it again soon. More connections coming up.